You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 2.
Hour 2 of the show, Overdrive continuing on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on TSN 4. Mark Rowe in for Brian Hayes this week alongside Dave Pullen. And the question of how players and coaches and different, you know, personnel of major sporting teams have dealt with the pandemic, and especially their health, is been risen numerous times. And Travis Green revealed today, and he's not even playing anymore, he's cut at least 10 pounds since the pandemic began. Would you say most head coaches are falling in that category, or the other one?
You know what? I bet most head coaches are falling into that category because
they can actually take care of themselves. And
well, they've had the first stress-free stretch of time that's this long. Mm-hmm. If you see an NHL coach, NHL coaches essentially have the summer off. And when you see a coach in May and you see him again in September, it looks like a totally different person. His face looks different. His hair looks different. He just looks so much more relaxed when he comes back to go to work. They need that summer. Well, they've never had a stretch of time like this with essentially no responsibilities. They couldn't go anywhere or do anything. They had no, they didn't have to be any speeches or anything at all. And different coaches handle it in different ways. Some just go away and hide in a cottage for the summer. And, you know, I think he's looked at it and said, okay, and I know they've got a bunch of projects. They're a team that would give their assistant coaches projects to do. You know, they break down certain aspects. One guy might get the power play across the league. Another guy might get three teams for what they're doing systematically. Mm-hmm. And they would have done all that, but you've never had the time to work out like he's just had. You know, Gary Woodland, the golfer, said the same thing. When has he had 3 months? Diet, training, and nothing else to do.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's been the kind of joke / question. What kind of shape are players, coming into these second training camps, whether it's baseball? You know, I know like Vladimir Guerrero's physique gets dissected all the time. And that's just a normal season just because he's such a big body, you know.
I played with guys that would have been nightmares coming back from a break like this. And I played with guys that would have come back in better shape than they left in. So there's always going to be a full flavor, but just in general, today's athlete is so different, Mark, in the way they look after themselves and the way they have to because of the way sports science controls them at every level. They're constantly reminded, their diets are different, people are pairing the foods for them. You know, the days of leaving and going right to the drive-thru at Wendy's are behind most players at this point and most coaches.
It's when you bring up Wendy's, I'm reminded of Mark Scheifele when I was in Barrie, and when he came back from the Jets camp for the first time, and I was just asking him, you know, what's the difference? What are they telling you? And he's like, they're all over me about my diet. And I was like, oh, really? He's like, yeah, I'm not allowed to go to Wendy's anymore. Like he said it so like dead face, like my life is
just shattered.
My life is
just
changed
shattered.
Forever. You know, like we're not going across the street to go through the drive-thru, but it's, like, is the 2+ week training camp, is that the right amount of time to get enough for the rest off?
I think it is because of the, you know, 3 to 4 week small group piece that they're going through right now. Mm-hmm. So essentially that's controlled in the environments as well. Most of the guys are, you know, one number of guys. I know I've talked to teams with as many as 28 guys in their home city.
Mm-hmm.
28 guys. I mean, they basically got the full team there, and they wanted to send a message. And that was all done internally with their, mm-hmm. you know, there was no mandate. There can't be from the team. But the guys got together and said, hey, we're sticking around here. And, you know, don't be going home. And they had some Europeans, I think, they were able to talk into staying. And that could be a huge advantage. It'll be interesting to see, and I'll be intrigued to see how this specific team does. Because they had the most of any team that I talked to in terms of guys in the exact town they played in.
Yeah, and there was two sides to that argument when we were hearing about players in Sweden skating, you know, 2 months ago and how they would have an advantage. And then I'd hear the other side, and I'm pretty sure Mike Johnson was voicing this argument. It won't matter because it's so far away from when we're actually playing games. And, you know, players will start skating before training camp, which they've obviously done in this phase. You know, they'll ramp it up to phase three in training camp. And by the time that you do get to those playoff series, you know, what someone did back in April shouldn't affect and shouldn't be an advantage over a player that was training at home and still staying in shape, but just wasn't able to put skates on.
Yeah, you're going to have that 2+ weeks. And the biggest thing is the banging, the actual skating and the timing and the stick handling. You know, those types of things will come. It's the banging. It's the physical play that you have to get some semblance of. You have to be able to do that at some point.
So since we are talking about, you know, players changing their physique during the pandemic, the one famous guy on tour right now is Bryson DeChambeau, who just hit a 429-yard drive at the Travelers Championship. He got a little help from the cart path, but still, when I saw, you know, before I saw the video, I kind of believed it, getting, you know, considering the bombs that he's hitting. And speaking of hitting bombs, you told me once that our next guest could hit some 350, 360 bombs. Joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline from ESPN, John Buchagross. John, would you like to confirm that story?
Well, I'm one of the few people on the planet with a hole in one on a par four.
Okay.
Even though I don't like to talk about it publicly,
I will
confess and come forward in the name of journalism.
Perfect.
To you two, including my great friend Dave Poulin, my former college hockey analyst at ESPN.
Well, and you have played golf with some very famous celebrities, including Dave Poulin.
Yes, I've been lucky.
Including Dave
and Poulin. Wayne Gretzky. I played 18 holes at Sherwood in California, 2009,
nice.
With Ray Ferraro, Wayne Gretzky, and Russ Cortinel. That was like that's like 1,400 career goals. That's got to be close to a record. Although I'm sure there's one guy who's played golf with Wayne, Brett Hull, and Mario. He probably has the record.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. That's pretty close. That's good stuff. And you were
Not
supposed
bad.
To be on a golf trip right now, correct?
Yeah, I was supposed to finish off a little 4-day trip in Scotland. It was going to be Tuesday through today, Carnoustie, King's Bar, and it was going to culminate with St. Andrews today. So a bit of a bummer. I was going to get a chance to play St. Andrews today, but of course everything was postponed, so we'll have to get her another time.
We're on TSN4 right now. We're showing the tweet that you posted earlier this afternoon. You got the sweater vest on. you're saluting
from the
crowd.
Bridge.
From the bridge.
Yeah,
you look
that's
good.
Jack Nicklaus's body when Nicklaus played his final hole there at St. Andrews. I texted my daughter, Mallory, who's really good at that stuff. I said, Mallory, can you superimpose my face over Nicklaus's face here so I can send out a tweet?
Wow. That's...
You could have picked a lot worse bodies from that day and age.
Exactly.
That's true. So, John, I'm sure you're like all of us. You know, you want sports to return. You want sports to return safely. I know some sports, including the PGA, have done that. But we're all waiting on, you know, the major leagues in North America to be able to do so. How would you rate your level of optimism right now in these plans that they've put in place in trying to execute them later this summer?
Well, let's be face it. Nobody knows anything, including scientists. You know, this is a virus, and it's unpredictable. We don't know exactly how it's going to react. What I do know is, you know, the biggest question is what, you know, how can people stomach, you know, the league, the players, not only from a health situation but a PR situation. How much can they stomach a few positive tests? Because we're going to have positive tests, because obviously this is a virus. It's in the air. It's out there. It's moving around the country. We see it now, how it's moving around the U.S. So it's just unpredictable. And what happens when a couple of guys, you know, get it, or two or three on a team, or a star player? And so it's the mystery of it and the uncertainty of it makes it, you know, makes one really, you can't be optimistic when you think about it, that any of this is going to see through to the end. You really can't be. You can be hopeful, which I always am, but it's a virus and no one can predict its movement. It's a lot like the weather. You know, it's forecast is good for tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it rains. Sometimes the forecast is bad tomorrow. Sometimes it's beautiful. So we got to kind of ride it out and see, we'll see how it goes a day, a week, a month at a time.
You know, we're all watching the other sports, but you just see what happens. And I thought last Friday was a critical day for all sports when three of the Tampa Bay Lightning and a couple of their staff were tested, positive, and the first golfer, Nick Watney, that was tested positive. The tournament continued, and even this week with a couple of the golfers dropping out and now being close to you in Connecticut, I think the PGA has handled it pretty well, going through some of the things that all the leagues are going to have to go through with positive tests and continuing to play.
Right. You have to be able to stomach the positive tests. You know, looking at the data and realizing that obviously an overwhelmingly amount of young people are asymptomatic. They don't even feel ill at all. A few are. And, you know, until we see that young, strong athlete go to the hospital or, you know, God forbid the ICU, it's, you know, those are things, well, let's face it, will have real human effect on decisions. And you're right. The PGA Tour has soldiered on. Guys sent home, even guys near guys who tested positive withdrew. I don't know if that was a tour saying, hey, can you do this? Even though we'll say it's voluntary, maybe you should do this. Think about it. Go home for 2 weeks. Make sure you're okay. So, yeah, they're trying to get through with this. But I'm even sure they're in a week-to-week mode here figuring out, okay, what's the number? What if 30 guys test positive? Or what? 20, what's our number here? So, again, it's unpredictable like the virus itself. And so it's going to be a lot on how you stomach a positive test and the severity of a person when they do get positive with the COVID-19.
John Buccigross from ESPN joining us on Overdrive. Not only is he a SportsCenter anchor, but he's also the lead voice for college hockey on the network. And we are hoping that the NHL is back this summer. I know that you are in that category as well. And we also saw Artemi Panarin yesterday be pretty outspoken and come out and say we shouldn't report until we revisit escrow and essentially get rid of it. And I know he's not alone. Like, players hate escrow. But what are your thoughts on the timing of these comments as they try to get back and we're now 2 weeks away from a training camp?
I think they were smart. I think it was smart timing. Life's about leverage. Can't get anything in life without leverage. I often tell my kids, don't expect your employer to give you a raise. Even if you earn it, you got to force them to give you a raise. You got to get an offer somewhere else. You got to threaten to leave. Unfortunately, let's face it, international business has taught us that throughout the decades. You have to force people to give you a raise. And this is obviously a situation where Panarin and his fellow union members are looking for a raise because they feel the escrow is unfair. And it's the owners who should build a business and maybe sometimes stomach a loss occasionally if they have a bad year and things like that. So I don't blame him. It's using some leverage here to try to get something they feel it's unfair, even if it's less of a percentage, whatever that is. So I actually commend him. He's one of the league's best players. I think he should be in the MVP race. I would not be flabbergasted if he won it. He's just an unbelievable player. And speaking out at a big market city like New York, I thought it was good on him that he actually did it.
Mm-hmm. I like the comments. The timing I struggle with. And I say that, John, because I think that baseball has messed this up and made it a labor situation and not a pandemic situation. And I think to date, hockey's done a pretty good job of communicating the sides back and forth. And whatever they've said at least has been, you know, away from the public. The public's so sensitive right now to all of our own situations. Everyone's dealing with some kind of hardship in whatever realm of life they're in. And that's something that, you know, I don't know about the timing of that statement for Panarin. I understand that, you know, the meaning of it and the gist of it, but just the timing of it, to me, I struggle with.
I guess if he feels like, though, that he's being taken advantage of, whether it's his health or whether we're just in a playoff situation where players aren't getting quote-unquote paid, whether the owners are trying to take advantage of the situation like maybe the baseball players did. Let's face it, throughout the history, it's been the baseball owners who've been messing things up and not the players. So I tend to side with the players a little bit when you have these battles because these are billionaires and these are wealthy men and they figure things out and they can move stuff around. And these guys are out there with their bodies and their health. So man, I'm gonna always lean a little bit on the players in the situations.
And players in the NBA have such a strong voice, and we've heard those voices throughout the last few weeks and even months. You know, the plan to go to Orlando from, you know, it's kind of been generalized from a Canadian perspective. Why would you go into that state with those numbers and they're skyrocketing? I don't know if you have any more information than we do about the hub and what Wild World of Sports will be like for the players, but the NBA just has to have so much confidence in what they're able to create there, because otherwise, you know, they're looking at a disaster with what's going on in that state.
Again, the virus is unpredictable. It can move around. The state was in good shape a month or two ago. Now, obviously, they've struggled with cases. But if you can create, if you're going to promote a lockdown on one end to help control the spread or control the virus, and you do create a bubble of people who are or did test, who do test negative, and the bubble is secure, and you live by that, then you should be fine. You know, because you're basically locking down. In a certain area, as long as there's no way, obviously, that there can be outside influences coming in and with continued testing. So I think, you know, we've been sold on the lockdown, and that's the way we got to do it to slow down the spread. And that's happened in a lot of other places. And then there's all kinds of different people going back and forth on why it's popped up recently. But yeah, I guess it's just confidence that you can actually create a bubble with testing and that it won't be compromised by any outside forces, no matter where you are. Because certainly within states, there's also good spots and bad spots as well, as you know. So, yeah, it's, again, this is a mystery. It's uncertain. And that makes it hard to be hopeful and to see any hockey team or basketball team actually raise a championship trophy. Man, that would be an unbelievable accomplishment, yeah. I think, just from what we're going through.
Butch, I know you're a big sports fan across the board. You have to relive a weekend for Mark and I that you did with three of your high school buddies. I was in the middle of it, but I think it was five sporting events centered around Chicago in maybe 3 days or 4 days. So think about it. I think it was. No, you had White Sox, Cubs.
Oh, that's my family baseball park trip.
Okay, so no, it was White Sox, Cubs, Notre Dame football that I had you at, and then you were maybe heading back to a Bears game and a Blackhawks game on Sunday. Some ridiculous weekend I was in the middle of.
Sounds great.
That's just an average weekend day for me. You know, there's too many to count. I was with my family on a baseball park trip. When they were little, we would drive around the whole country. And one time, we were in Chicago at a game. And I said, you know, we could drive to the Field of Dreams field right now. It's 3 hours straight west. We'd hang out for a whole, however you hang out at the Field of Dreams field in Iowa. And we'd turn around and come right back the same road. I know you don't want to do it. I don't think that doesn't sound like I want to do it, but after we've done it and take pictures, we'll be glad we did it. And now here we are 15 years, 20 years later, and I'm glad we did it that day. It was a great day playing catch with my kids, walking out of the cornfield, in the cornfield. So, yeah, sports moments like that, sometimes you got to suck it up. And just, it sounds daunting, but you'll be glad you did it when it's over.
Oh, that sounds amazing. And just getting back to that world will be amazing, where we can go to games, whether it's games in Chicago or Hartford Yard Goats game, you know, it's I'll take it all at this point. John, really appreciate you coming on the show. Send our best to our boy Nabil. Make sure you're taking care
you
of him.
It.
And we look forward to chatting with you in the future.
Yeah, my best to Canada. All of us, just keep being resilient and patient. Those are two hard words, but hopefully both those things will be better when this is all said and done. We'll be more patient and we'll be more resilient and thankful for the great lives that we have with sports and with our friends and socially with our fellow sports fans.
That's right. And bring back the overtime challenge. That means we're in a good place in the world when that's happening.
Take care, Butch.
A lot of hats to give away, boys.
Yeah. I'm sure you have a whole basement filled with hats right now.
I do. Let's go.
Okay. Thank you, John. John Butchagross joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. The showroom's open. They're taking the necessary steps to provide a safe environment for every guest. Visit Maple Toyota next to Wonderland or buy online at mapletoyota.com. That's quite the cast.
Yeah, a really funny sequence with him. He was hosting the selection show, the NCAA selection show. So they called me and asked me if I would be, you know, the celebrity coach or whatever that sat with him. And I said, only if we're out of the tournament for sure. And we were a team that was right on the line. And they said, you're out of the tournament for sure. So I flew to Connecticut, got all set up, and Saturday night we're watching as the games break down. 12 teams make the tournament this time. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, there's a couple of huge upsets. We're in the tournament. And back then, this is when you selected them. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't all numerical and and all figured out. And so they're looking at me and they're going, well, you got to do the show tomorrow, but you're in the tournament. So I go to bed on Saturday night thinking we are in the NCAA tournament for the first time in the history of the program. I wake up in the morning. I'm getting makeup. Butchie walks in, goes, you're out. I go, what do you mean we're out? Well, there was more discussion after you went to bed last night and you guys were voted out.
Oh,
that's how subjective it was back then.
Oh.
So I said to the makeup girl, you better put a smile on this face. That's the only way I'm going to smile through this show.
Well, your whole program is set for the next year or two when you do make it, right?
It's like, huge. It's huge.
So you're,
and, you know, so we went from in to politically being out.
Yeah,
one of the big programs edged their way back in,
and that's someone's job too. Like I
oh,
you know, you crazy. could be coaching for your life, which you know, coaches tend to do, and
sure.
And if you get that news, you're going to bed thinking, regardless of what we do in this tournament, I know I'm going to be staying around for at least another season.
Yeah, you're one of the top 12 teams in college hockey. I remember Butchie walking into makeup going, got some bad news, Booley.
Yeah,
you're out.
You're out. So. Anyways, yeah, John Buchagrass, who was the host of NHL Tonight when ESPN had the coverage. Maybe the NHL goes back with ESPN.
Always one of the biggest hockey advocates at ESPN, without a question. You know, you knew you had guys in your corner. Steve Levy, another one at ESPN that was always a big hockey advocate. But, you know, over the years, Buchagrass has stuck with it all the way through.
Yeah, him and Barry Melrose, who I got to work with at the NHL Network, who is a character, to say the least. Speaking of hockey and news from the NHL, Pierre Lebrun is going to join us next. We'll get the latest on, obviously, hub cities. I feel like I'm a broken record at this point, but it changes every day, Dave. Vancouver was in, and now they're out. And is Edmonton the leading candidate in Canada? Is it Toronto? Vegas? Are they still pretty much solidified as the spot in the United States? Well, we got lots to talk to Pierre Lebrun about as Overdrive continues on TSN 1050, the TSN app, but also on TSN 4. Overdrive continuing with Mark Rowe and Dave Pullen. We'll be joined by our hockey insider Pierre Lebrun in just a few minutes. And you know when you do a segment on television or an interview and you're not quite sure how people are going to react to it? Is it going to have any legs? Well, our interview with Jerry D yesterday, I'm not too shocked about this. I don't know how much you've seen on Twitter, but there's been clips from
some heavy play.
Our interview with Jerry D, and well, they've exploded. It's like throwing gasoline on a fire. It's it continues between James Duffy and Kyle Dubas, a little bit from Mo and a bunch of other spectators and everyone that has a say in what's going to happen with the face-off, which is Tuesday at TPC Toronto between Team Duffy and Team Dubas.
And Jerry was great yesterday, and he had a very good point. It's what he does professionally. Now, while Duffy speaks professionally, Jerry's funny professionally.
Oh, yeah. There's a different, like.
that is a whole different task.
Well.
And you know what? And Duffy's sharp. He can certainly handle it. But that's going to be a great word contest when it starts.
Yeah. Duffy has a lot of tools in his toolbox when it comes to being a host.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we all. You know, he's, you know, let's be honest, he has set the bar in our business.
He's
and one of the things that James can do is he can be really serious and really on his game. And then he can also be really funny. And as we're showing on TSN 4, he made a poll. Who's the funniest actor on Mr. D? Jonathan Torrens, Bette McDonald, Naomi Senecas, anyone not named Jerry? And he's got the cursor on anyone not named Jerry. So, and he spelled Jerry wrong. So that is going to be a lot of fun on Tuesday as James Duffy.
Fully entertaining.
Jeff
I'm involved.
O'Neil.
I might have a warm-up round with one of those gentlemen coming before Tuesday. I may be involved.
Okay.
I'm just fodder for the warm-up.
Okay. You'd be a good warm-up round companion because
maybe an audition to caddy. I don't know.
Okay. There's a lot of people who want to be there and want it televised in every single TSN. They want it across the board. So I don't know if we can get that going, but there's going to be a lot of clips on social media And like you said, a lot of chirps. Anyways, to go back to my point, you know, Duffy can be funny, can be serious. He's so good at what he does. But if you're just honing in on chirps and comedy, like you're dealing with a professional in Jerry D. So I would not.
He does it for a living.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's really good at it.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are 2 weeks away from training camp. And it continues with, you know, more positive cases. We're going to get that, just like every league has kind of had to endure. And the message out there is this is going to happen, and we have to be able to get those numbers down and get everyone into our selective hubs and get to what would be phase four. And that almost seems as tough as actually executing the playoffs itself. And with more on that, we're joined by our TSN Hockey Insider, Pierre LeBrun. How are you, Pierre?
I'm all right. I just cracked open a cold one here at the cottage.
All right.
And ready to get the weekend going.
This is going to be a great interview. I like it.
You got me at the start of the cold one.
Okay.
Unfortunately, it'd be better if you called me back in 3 hours.
Yeah. Well, that's when you'll be into the red wine, right?
How does everyone know about me? I don't get it.
Because you have good taste. I'm just saying. You have, I don't know. I've been around you enough, I guess. I don't know.
If they shared a dinner with you, they know about you, Pierre.
Yeah,
I guess that's true.
So how do you feel about being asked every day? Give us an update on the Hub Cities.
Oh, my gosh. Texts from people from teams and what's going on with the Hub Cities. Oh, my gosh. I got roped into it, and I've been following it all along, I guess, like a dog and a bone at this point.
Right.
And, it's kind of fascinating because last night I went to bed a little nervous because, of course, I reported on Insider Treaty that I thought it would go to Monday after Vancouver hit the sidetracks and the league had to sort of reset with Toronto and Edmonton. And then this morning, late last night and this morning, getting feelers that actually they might try to ram this through today.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really how they started the day. There were player calls on the PA side, there were league calls, the league and the PA were talking. But by mid to late afternoon, as you saw from my tweet, NHL Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly informing me that he didn't think it was going to get done today. Not from a lack of trying, because they don't have that many days to play with at this point for all of this to get figured out. And listen, I don't know if anyone will admit this, but they really would have wanted this actually done by yesterday, never mind the fact that they didn't get it done today. But the Vancouver thing threw them for a loop, and now they're really focused on Toronto and Edmonton and figuring that out. So we'll see whether it comes down this weekend or waits till Monday, but that's where it is now.
Do you still feel that Vegas is the lock that most people have thought it was all the way along, Pierre?
Pooley, I'm not ready to use the word lock only because, yes, I think it's still a solid formula, and we haven't heard any evidence to this point to suggest they've backed out of it. So, yes, right now I think they're in. I think it's Vegas and either Toronto or Edmonton. But I will tell you that each passing day, as it turns out, because this process has gone longer than the league would have wanted, the cases keep piling up in Nevada, the COVID cases. So
right
now it's been explained to me by several sources involved in the process that, you know, I think I told you guys this last time we were on, but the Vegas bubble, as it was presented to them as the bid in the bid presentation that each market made, is seen by a lot of people as the tightest bubble of all the bid cities.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, even if all hell's breaking loose around you, the idea is that the players and staff inside are safe. That's what I'm told. Do I think for sure it's true or that's how it's going to work out? I mean, listen, I'm not a scientist. But so that's one of the reasons why they still really like Vegas. Having said that, would it be the worst thing in the world if it ended up being Toronto and Edmonton?
No.
Not to me.
That's the reaction that so many Canadians have, not to sound super bias towards Canada and hockey and it, you know, belongs here, that sort of narrative. But, you know, if you're looking at numbers, why can't it be? And it, you know, you can't use the, like, well, we have to have a presence in a U.S. market. It's on television. They can play it on Mars. It doesn't matter. So I think that's kind of been the frustration. But it goes back to, you know,
Frankly, from that perspective, we probably should have a tournament in New Zealand.
Well,
which
sure.
seems to be like the safest place in the world right now.
Yeah. or Moose Jaw, or like, I don't know. You know, there are so many obstacles they have to kind of get through for this to happen. Is there? I know you pointed out Vancouver, but is there one or two things that's kind of slowing things down that they just want to be extra careful with?
Yeah, I think they want to not rush through it. I mean, they wanted this done today, but so here's what I will tell you based on what I know is that the obstacles that ended up being there, and listen, I think the BC health authorities were pretty public about it, so it's not insider knowledge. Don't seem to be there with the Edmonton bid and the Toronto bid, that both the Alberta health authorities and the Ontario health authorities, which is rather noteworthy, I think, seemingly have signed off on the NHL plan and each city's bid. Mm-hmm. But I still think at the end of the day, because the players and NHLPA have been partners in this process, in the Hub City process, especially over the last couple of weeks, you know, the players are having a lot of calls. And last night, there was a call again among players on the committee and talking about Toronto and Edmonton. You know, remember when the week started, I don't think this is a secret, the players wanted Vancouver. And that's where it was at. Let's do Vancouver and Vegas. And then when the league started negotiating all the, you know, all the levers that have to be put in, the documents and the rules, the logistics, obviously, they hit a roadblock with BC Health. And by the way, we may look back in 5 years and think that BC did the right thing, by the way. So who knows? This is more than just hockey. My point is that now, within about a 48-hour period, you're asking the players to make a call in terms of replacing Vancouver. And, you know, you want to hear as many voices as you can, right, as you're doing that. So I think that's part of what is transpiring here. But, you know, we'll finally find out. And then we're going to start to get a lot of news here, because the hub cities will come first. And then at some point, you know, I really think in the next 7 to 10 days, probably the next 7 days, but possibly it goes a bit longer, CBA extension and return to play package to vote on for the players, you know, within the next week probably. And that's a lot of stuff going on. As summer begins here.
As you chat about that, a little surprising to me, the comments of first Artemi Panarin and then Ryan Kesler that came out about attacking the escrow and the escrow being too high, and something that, you know, from the start of this, Pierre, from that very first day that you and I sat on that panel on March 12th, we talked about an opportunity here for the cohesion between the NHL and NHLPA. And a new level of communication. And that has been there throughout this, and quietly having the CBA talk sort of off to the side. I'm a little surprised by the comments of both those players. I've never, quite frankly, heard Artemi Panarin opine about anything before. Ryan Kesler, a little less surprised. You know, he's a Kurt Overhart agent, and he's been vocal, you know, about escrow in particular. But, you know, the escrow, with the players using the false inflator a number of times over the last period of years, have been the reason that stayed as high as it was, because they have falsely inflated the cap through that time period. And so, you know, it's so strange to put all this on the players' plate right now, as you say, in the next 7 to 10 days, with the decision on the pandemic looming.
But the funny thing about all that, And listen, I like players voicing. I hope we hear more and more players voicing how they feel, regardless of what the outcome is. One thing I can't stand, having covered a bunch of lockouts over the years, is players complaining 6 months after they're into this new CBA. They don't like it.
Right.
Were you part of any of the meetings? Did you say anything? Well, no, but, well, get involved.
Exactly.
Have a voice when it matters, before the vote. Have a voice. And the NHLPA office is ready for calls any day. When the executive boards, the 31 player reps, have their calls, I don't know how many people know this, but other players are allowed to join. Any player in the league is allowed to join those calls and listen in. Well, this won't surprise you that 800 players aren't doing that. So,
well, apathy is always a huge word, Pierre, and it's usually depends on what stage of your career you're at and where you are in a contract.
Sure.
And those are the two driving forces.
I love hearing it from his voice. You know, it's probably more productive to do it internally, but I have no problem with players doing it publicly. I mean, it's a democracy, and there's a lot of voices that should be heard. And listen, if the players ultimately vote out or return the plan, hey, that's their call, man. Like, if that's how they feel unsafe about it, then no, honestly, I don't think anyone should criticize them. They will know, if they vote no, what the financial repercussions are. But knowing that, if they still don't want to play, then, I mean, good on them. That's their decision. That's why there's a vote coming. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's going to happen. I think just like lockouts, I think when you get near the end of these things, these negotiations, you tend to hear more from the naysayers than you do from the silent majority.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, you know, we'll see how this plays out, and I haven't had time to track down 800 players, so I don't know really where it's at. But anecdotally, I think there's still the yeses outweighs the noes. But listen, the players have a right to not like what's in front of them, because the next couple of years aren't going to be fun no matter what the CBA is. The thing that I find interesting is that, yes, 20% escrow is not going to be fun for the next couple of years, and that's the figure that the PA and the league are negotiating right now in the CBA talks. I understand that. It's better than 35%, which is what it would be without a CBA extension. So, I mean, listen, it's not going to be pleasant for a lot of people in pro sports the next couple of years. I don't know that the average person has the violin out, because I think a lot of people are suffering right now in all kinds of different ways. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't think a lot of people lose sleep over that, but I get it. I mean... A lot of players have big bonuses payable next Wednesday on July 1st, right? Huge mm-hmm. bonuses. Record amount of bonuses in the history of the NHL paid on this July 1st, because a lot of people thought it might be a lockout year. Mm-hmm. And so people are holding their breath, a lot of players and agents, as to what the mechanism is going to be in the CBA extension, which will deal with all those bonuses.
Mm-hmm. Pierre, during...
If I'm correct, it's north of $300 million, is it not, Pierre?
I think, right. Yeah, I don't have the number in front of me, but it is a record. Yeah.
Pierre, during a normal year, a group of GMs would be on pins and needles ahead of the draft lottery. this is anything but a normal year. And there's also a pretty, you know, it's a great draft class, and it's led by Alexis Lafreniere. From the GMs and executives that you've talked to about just this whole process, what is the mood like going into a pretty big night for the NHL?
Yeah, I mean, it's... Like, I think, for example, I haven't talked to the Red Wings, but I knowing over the years the way Steve Yzerman is a practical person, my guess is he's going into this saying, well, the odds are we're not getting the number one pick. So he's arranged himself mentally
right.
that he's not getting it, and he's focusing, and they've had a ton of calls and scouting calls. I know the Red Wings probably one of the busiest teams, that you know, they have to focus on two or three or what have you. That's just the way they go about things. And if they get one, then it's a pleasant surprise. Mm-hmm. You know, Ottawa is such an interesting spot. The worst they can do is end up at 5 and 6, which still should be quite a haul for them. They could end up with 1 and 2,
yeah,
which is not, you know, not probable. But this is a, you know, as long as Eugene Melnyk doesn't get in the way of it, this could be the start of quite an exciting era in the nation's capital with what they already have, what could be coming. You know, and Pierre Dorion got a lot more involved, I think, this year. Part of it, why not, with COVID, but very involved in terms of looking at a lot of tape and doing a lot of scouting himself. So I think if you're a Senators fan, you're nervous right now, but you also know that this could be the start of something else, given what's already there.
Well, it'll be fascinating to watch what plays out, and if Team H or C or E gets the number one pick, because you know we've all been rooting for those teams since our birth. enjoy the cottage, enjoy that cold one. We appreciate all the insight on Hub Cities, which, by the way, I hope you never have to report on Hub Cities ever again in your career. But
oh my gosh,
here we are, and hopefully we're talking about actual hockey being played in a few weeks. But enjoy the weekend, Pierre, and all the best to you and your family.
All right, sounds great, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, there you have it, Pierre LeBrun, our hockey insider on the draft lottery and the Hub Cities, where it's like I said, it really does sound like if Vancouver was able to execute the plan and right. and the news didn't come out yesterday, that a decision would have been made already, and it would have been Vancouver and probably Vegas.
Yeah, very interesting with two West Coast time zones as well.
Yeah.
And but easier to control with West Coast time zones, I guess. You just play earlier in the day, right? Yeah.
How about those
1 o'clock, 4 o'clock, and 7 o'clock fits fine in the East. You get a 10 o'clock game in the East.
Yeah, I guess so. We're at this point, we'll watch games at 9 a.m. Right? We're gonna get that in the MLS.
Whenever you put one on, there's right? a good chance we're gonna be calling it or working it or watching it. So
TFC has their schedule, and their third game in that group stage is at 9 a.m.
Because they're not. I saw that, which is really remarkable. I think the earliest game in the NHL would be 1 p.m. would make sense to me, and guys are used to playing afternoon games.
Right.
That wouldn't faze them, you know, very much at all. The 9 a.m. thing, I'm not sure how that works out.
Yeah. Still to come on the show, Carlo Colaiacovo from First Up will get his take on not just his vacation, but also on what's going on in the NHL, and also Mark Zecchino, host of Golf Talk Canada, the Travelers Championship. Mackenzie Hughes from Dundas is in contention. All that and more as Overdrive continues on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on TSN 4. Still to come on the show, Carlo Colaiacovo and Mark Zecchino. Mark Rowe alongside Dave Poulin here on a Friday edition of the show. And we were mentioning the Travelers Championship. Mackenzie Hughes won off the lead right now, and that lead held by a guy who's had a pretty good week, 50-year-old Phil Mickelson, who yesterday found out, or at least it was released to the public. I don't know how long he's actually known. He will get to play the U.S. Open because there is no qualifying like there normally would for the U.S. Open.
Right.
He is exempted in. He was ranked 61st at the time, and they're taking the top 70 and not the top 60. So that's good news. And then today he fires a 63. The 50-year-old, who looks great.
Still got game.
He's wearing the aviators today, and
he's had those on lately. I don't know what's up with that look. I mean, talk about going retro on us with the sunglasses, and they're big aviators too. They're not small ones.
But just imagine, you know, we're all hoping that the second half of the summer and the fall is epic, because, you know, it means first off our world's in a better place that we can actually have sports, and you know, we're all craving and desperate for live sporting entertainment. If he somehow wins the U.S. Open after being a runner-up a record six times, like
right.
that would, you know, you think of Tiger last year winning the Masters. No, Phil isn't Tiger, but that would be
that would be the career Grand Slam.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
the one he hasn't won. But think of what's ahead of us in terms of the major tournaments, in terms of what could be, you know, the majors could be going on at the exact same time that your conference finals are going on in basketball and hockey. Who knows what's happening with football and college football? I mean, I think that's huge, huge question marks there with those two guys. And somehow golf is the one that's maybe the easiest to continue. And you know, think about the decision that some of the players made this week. So Brooks Koepka, it was his caddy, am I correct, that who tested positive?
Yes.
And so Koepka steps back. But when those guys step back, and a good question for Carlo, because he's still pretty wired with guys that are playing in the league, there are going to be some guys that decide not to play for a variety of reasons. But when a golfer decides not to play, he doesn't get paid.
Yeah.
That's a big difference.
Yeah.
That's now, a big difference.
And, you know, Brooks Koepka is going to do fine with money, but there are guys who are going to take
He is, but his brother also pulled out, and his brother was a Monday qualifier maybe, and you know, hardly ever gets to play. And when Koepka pulled out, he had rented a home and his brother was staying with, and I guess the brother felt the pressure to follow suit and say, well, if my big brother's out, then I'm out as well.
Yeah.
And but you know, in an individual sport where if you don't play, you don't get paid. If a player decides he's not playing, then somebody else gets the opportunity to play. There's so many slots in a tournament. A little bit different than a team sport if a critical player says, I'm not playing, and here's why.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to talk to Mark Zecchino about that at 6:25 on, you know, the scoring is great, how golf has handled the positive test pretty well so far, as I knock on wood. So we have Mark coming up, but first, After the break, Carlo Koliakovo on everything going on in the NHL and the world of sports as Overdrive continues on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on TSN 4.